Welcome to the GenCast Network. Created every Thursday, GenCasts will feature the latest biotech news of the week, in addition to compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. In this week's GenCast, Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling talks with Brent Erickson from the Biotechnology Industry Organization. But first, the news of the week. The executive board of Schering AG Germany will support a voluntary public offer by Bayer to acquire all of the outstanding shares of Schering for a price per share of €86 in cash. Bayer's offer represents a premium of 29% over the ex-ETRA closing price of March 10, 2006. At the offer price, Schering's equity is valued at €16.3 billion based on 190 million shares outstanding. The offer price is 39% above the Schering share price before the announcement of the hostile bid by Merck and 12% above this competing offer. Dynavax Technologies plans to acquire German biopharmaceutical and vaccine manufacturer Rhine Biotech in a cash transaction of approximately $12 million. Rhine Biotech is part of Netherlands-based Rhine Biotech, a company 93% owned by Byrna Biotech. Byrna was recently acquired by Crucell. Dynavax has had an agreement with Byrna for supply of hepatitis B surface antigen for use with Heplisav, its hepatitis B vaccine. Officials at Dynavax and Crucell maintain that the deal is designed to accomplish key strategic goals for both firms. Through this acquisition, Dynavax gains ownership of a European Union GMP-certified vaccine manufacturing facility, control over the production of hepatitis B surface antigen and potentially other antigens to support clinical and commercial programs, management and personnel with expertise in biopharmaceutical product development and production, and a complementary pipeline of vaccines and antiviral products. The transaction enables Crucell to continue to focus on core competencies by divesting a non-strategic asset. Genencore says that it obtained certification for the first enzyme technology designed as a prion disinfectant for medical devices. Developed jointly with the UK's Health Protection Agency, Prionzyme carries the CE mark. Prions have been a problem because of the risk from protein-based particles on medical instruments. They are the causative agents of bovine spongiform encephalopathy and its human form variant, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. The use of Genencore's Prionzyme for medical instruments combines the company's enzyme with temperature and pH conditions. The product is added as the first step in a pre-soak process for stainless steel instruments. PrimeGen Biotech says it has isolated and therapeutically reprogrammed adult human germline stem cells derived from the testes and directionally differentiated them into cardio, neuro, osteo, and chondrocytes. Exploiting the close developmental relationship between embryonic stem cells and postnatal germ cells, PrimeGen scientists isolated postnatal germ cells and reprogrammed them to cells that have a therapeutic potential. According to Francisco J. Silva, Executive Vice President of Research and Development, cells taken from the germline have a unique property that is different from other somatic cells and stem cells. They have an evolutionary conserved mechanism to protect their genetic component. He goes on to note that cells from the germline do not age like all other somatic cells. This conservation makes these cells far more therapeutic than any other cell available. Alnylam Pharmaceuticals and its collaborators at Proteva Biotherapeutics demonstrated silencing in primates of the gene for ApoB with clinically significant efficiency as demonstrated by reductions in levels of cholesterol and low-density lipoproteins. In the Nature study, Alnylam scientists and collaborators demonstrated protein silencing in primates of the gene for ApoB, a disease-causing protein which to date has not been amenable to targeting with traditional small-molecule protein or antibody therapies. The achievement of this result by systemic administration through the bloodstream demonstrates the broad potential of RNAi therapeutics to target disease-causing genes and significantly expands the previously demonstrated opportunity for RNAi therapeutics to treat human disease by direct administration to sites of disease, such as with respiratory or ocular delivery. Researchers at the McCusick-Nathans Institute of Genetic Medicine at Johns Hopkins say they have invented a cost-effective and efficient method of analyzing junk DNA and identified regions critical for controlling gene function. They also found that these control regions from different species don't have to look alike to work alike. The scientists developed a system that uses zebrafish to test mammalian DNA and identify DNA sequences that are involved in turning on a gene. In studying RET, the major gene implicated in Hirschsprung disease, and multiple endocrine neoplasia, the team identified DNA sequences that can control RET but had not been identified using standard methods. The notion that mutations and enhancers play a role in human disease progression has been difficult to confirm because usually enhancers are located in the 98% of the human genome that does not code for protein, termed non-coding DNA, according to the scientists. Unlike DNA sequences that code for protein, non-coding DNA, sometimes referred to as junk DNA, follows few rules for organization and sequence patterns and therefore is more difficult to study. Thermo Electron received the Gold Editors Award at PitCon 2006. Editors in attendance voted Thermo's LTQ Orbitrap Hybrid Mass Spectrometer the best new product introduction of the show, which featured over 1,000 exhibiting companies. The product is used in small molecule research, proteomics, metabolomics, and drug discovery applications. Thermo Electron believes the LTQ Orbitrap's patented technology represents the most significant breakthrough in mass spectrometry since the ion trap was introduced over 20 years ago. In-depth coverage of the news of the week can be found on www.genengnews.com. Just click on the Sticky Ends Online link. And now, John Sterling talks with Brent Erickson about industrial biotechnology.
What is a good definition of industrial biotechnology?
Well, quite simply, John, industrial biotech is the application of life sciences in the manufacturing sector. Beyond that, we tend to think of the development of a bio-based economy where the goods and services produced in manufacturing would be using renewable agriculture feedstocks in large part and would be using microorganisms, enzymes, or other types of exotic genomics to make products.
Right. Now, it seems in the past that a number of these technologies, especially for chemical applications, bioremediation, hazardous waste, they had been around in various forms for a number of years. But it seems like, again, about a decade ago, it just sort of blossomed all over again. What happened?
Well, I think that's right. I think early on in the beginning days of biotechnology, everybody saw the potential across the board for biotech, for healthcare, agriculture, and industrial and environmental applications. But most companies eventually chose to move into healthcare. It's interesting, I was with Jim Mullen, the CEO of Biogen IDEC yesterday, and he told me that actually Biogen had looked at cellulosic ethanol back in the early 80s. So companies had forays into this area, but pretty much focused on healthcare. And then there was a burst of industrial applications, which I think the biotech industry overpromised to the chemical industry what they could deliver. So I think there was some healthy skepticism developed over the years. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, we saw environmental biotechnology kind of peak with companies that were developing microbes for toxic waste cleanup. But then Congress funded the Superfund toxic cleanup law and decided to give preference to pick and shovel cleanup, where they actually take the soil away and dispose of it instead of using microbial bioremediation. And that really hurt that sector. About the same time, we started to see the large enzyme companies like Novozymes and Genencor really take off. And ever since, we've seen an explosion in industrial biotech as the technologies have really matured and the new gene shuffling tools and metabolic engineering tools have really started to bear fruit.
Now, it seems like a very broad field encompassing a range of industries. Can you tell our listeners and readers in Gen, what are some of the hotter areas of application?
Certainly. I think, if you look at ag biotech or healthcare biotech, it's very discrete and well-defined, whereas industrial biotech is getting very diverse as it diffuses out into the industrial manufacturing landscape, and that's both a benefit and a challenge to deal with. But I think the hot areas that we're seeing are in fine chemicals, pharmaceuticals, renewable chemical platforms. Biofuels is tremendously hot right now, both in biodiesel and cellulosic ethanol. and also in the area of food processing aids and personal care and cosmetics. These are the areas we see that are really hot right now.
Okay, now a lot of biotechnology over the years, people have always talked about the promise, things that are going to be coming down the line. So now since industrial biotech is a field per se is kind of new, can you talk about a number of examples where industrial biotechnology is having an impact right now?
There are a lot of great examples right now. A couple of my favorite examples involve Codexis. Cargill is a big agriprocessor, and they had tried for years to commercialize a biological route to 3-HP, which is 3-hydroxypropionic acid. That's a chemical intermediate to a number of chemicals, but most notably acrylic acid. And you may not know what acrylic acid is, but it's an absorbent. It's the main absorbent in baby diapers, for instance. It's about a $4 billion a year industry. And they got four of the five steps done, but they couldn't finish it. And so they went to Codexis, and within a matter of 6 months, Codexis found the biological route. So they can make 3-HP now from corn sugar instead of petroleum and do it cheaper. And we're going to see some big announcements coming out in the chemical industry this year about this new biological route to 3-HP and acrylic acid. I think another one that involves Codexis is the signing of their deal with Pfizer, where Pfizer is integrating the industrial biotech platform into their drug discovery and production process from the ground up. I think that's significant. And Codexis has signed some other deals with pharmaceuticals, and they're working with Lonza on one of the statin drugs, for instance. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this on the pharma side as well. So pharma and chemicals is really hot. And then cellulosic ethanol, Genencor, and Novozymes, as well as Iagen and Dyadic, have made some tremendous advances in getting the cost of enzymes down for cellulosic ethanol. And we're seeing the venture capital community really get excited about this.
Good. Now, looking down the line, 5, 10, 15 years, with all of these exciting technologies that come under this rubric of industrial biotechnology, what might be really possible? What might companies and scientists be able to do with this that they can't do now?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot more of the chemical industry using industrial biotech as we move down the road, because they need a secure supply of feedstock. And right now, they're using natural gas and crude oil primarily. We've all seen what's happened to the prices of those, and those prices can fluctuate. But there's also an issue about security of supply. And I think they're also looking for lower cost catalysts. And, you know, companies like BASF and DSM are in the forefront of developing some of these biotech catalysts that are changing these processes. So we're going to see the chemical industry transformed over the next 10 to 15 years. We're going to see the transportation fuel industry transform. I think you're going to see the big oil companies move into industrial biotech in a big way over the next 10 years. We're already seeing BP and Shell and Chevron having some activity in this area. Shell has funded Iagen's, some of Iagen's research up in Canada for their cellulosic ethanol. BP is going to make a big play in this. And Chevron's had an active biotech group for some years, and I think you'll see that growing. So I think in the transportation fuels, and then the really exotic stuff like Craig Venter's working on with synthetic biology. I think we've just scratched the surface on synthetic biology, and we're going to see an explosion of applications in synthetic biology over the next 10 years. And then I would also say that a little noticed area of biotech is marine biotech, and I think we're going to see a lot of great new products coming out of marine biotech, both in the drug side and personal care and industrial sides as well.
Boy, Brent, it sounds like an exciting field.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in next Thursday.